Welcome to the Guardian podcast. I'm on Piccadilly on a Monday morning. A lot of traffic. Everyone's just going to work. And I'm lucky enough to be going to see the new Rodin exhibition at the Royal Academy, which is a huge, exciting show. I'm very, very thrilled about it. It's going to involve his great work, The Gates of Hell, which is the manifesto for his career, and in which he explores all the ideas, which he then turns into individual statues. That's certainly going to be one of the show's highlights. And here it is. It's The Gates of Hell. The Gates of Hell introduces the exhibition. It is the programmatic work of Rodin's life, and here it is. And it's a very good place to start the show. Oh, there's a few people now walking along Piccadilly and noticing The Gates of Hell, and perhaps we'll ask a few of them what they think.
I love it. I think it's very appropriate for it to be at the front of the Academy. I just finished there as a student.
I think it's very impressive. It's the movement in it. It flows very well. I mean, this is a wonderful spot to promote anything.
I'm not a huge fan, to tell the truth. It's quite dark and imposing. What is it? Do you know?
Well, it's by Rodin, and there's an exhibition of Rodin at the Royal Academy.
Okay.
It's supposed to be the Gates of Hell from Dante's Inferno.
So dark and imposing is what he was going for, really, then?
Yes, I mean, you could say it was very effective.
Yeah.
Who's the main seated figure?
It's, of course, that with The Thinker by Rodin.
Yes.
Actually, Catherine Lamp has just turned up, the curator. I mean, what exactly does The Thinker represent on The Gates of Hell?
Originally, he thought of Dante but it's a sort of poet-thinker, although it doesn't look like one. Tony Cragg in the film is really funny. I've never seen anybody thinking like that. He looks morose. He doesn't look like he's pensive. It's a kind of person looking down on, you know, what's happened to humanity, but a poet, from a poet's point of view, rather than a, you know, judgmental god.
Rodin took on this commission fairly early in his career.
Yes.
It was to be a monumental gateway for a museum in Paris. And he never actually finished it. The cast we're looking at was made after his death. And instead what he did was he tinkered with it for many years. And out of this, it became the manifesto, the programme of his work. I mean, it really dominates the courtyard. It's a tremendous sight when you turn the corner. It's a very tall, monumental gateway made of metal. But it's not really a gate. It's a model of a gate. You know, you couldn't actually go through it and open it. And it's a tremendous cascade of figures, tumultuous. As you get closer, you realise the horror of it. It really is the gates of hell. And you seem to be looking through these gates into hell itself. There are two pillars up the sides, which swarm with figures. But then where the gates are, there's a sort of a space that falls back, disturbing in the way that this space recedes, and inside you see hundreds, it seems like hundreds or thousands of people who are suffering terribly. There are bodies, you know, there are a lot of naked bodies, a lot of twisting, a lot of falling. Every face you see is full of pain and suffering. At the top of it all, a very familiar form, probably the most famous image by Rodin, the Thinker. And the Thinker is actually sitting at the top of the great gates of hell, obviously meditating on the horrors all around him, the tragedy all around him, as people fall down into the pit of despair. There's an erotic quality of fear. There's a lot of sex in it. There's a lot of writhing, a lot of cavorting. It's an amazing thing to see here in the courtyard of the Royal Academy, but it is in no way an old-fashioned thing to see. Rodin is an artist of the late 19th century, contemporary of painters like Monet. And yet there's something about, when you see this, there's no question, it's a sensational work. And out of this come all the figures like The Kiss, which is in the Tate Gallery, The Thinker, and a lot of Rodin's ideas, you see them here, and he then created large sculptures out of them. So I think what we should now go and do is go inside the Royal Academy and see those works, see the works which come out of the gates of hell, as it were.
Welcome to the Royal Academy.
Okay, so we're walking up into the exhibition now. I have to say, it's an extraordinary thing, this show. I mean, I hope it's going to be an extraordinary thing, because this is in the main galleries of the Royal Academy, where we're used to seeing these huge shows like Aztecs and Turks, shows that exhibit entire cultures, actually. And here you have an exhibition of one man, which fills those same galleries. Is it going to work? Is it going to look thin? Is it going to be convincing? I'm very interested to find out.
The exhibition starts in this room. Go through here.
This is a very early work, I understand.
Well, here we are. We're looking at rooms full of bronze, sculptures, drawings, maquettes made of plaster. And straight away, there's something very powerful about it, and very beautiful as well. I was going to say it actually suddenly feels like being in Paris instead of being in London, which is quite nice on a Monday morning. There's an emotional strength even to the first works. We're only here looking at Rodin's early works before he attained his maturity, but there is a formidable character to them and sensuality. Before we see some more of Rodin's works and look closer at Rodin's achievement, let's talk to Catherine Lampert, who's the lead curator of the exhibition, to find out more about the man.
I'm Catherine Lampert, the co-curator of the exhibition, and we're standing in the room with the monument to Whistler, which is really a tribute to Gwen John and one of my favourite rooms. She came to model for Rodin in 1904 and quickly became infatuated with him, and he fascinated with her face, with her character, with her sort of inner life. And although he had been commissioned to make a monument to Whistler, it was going to be an impossible task from the beginning. He wasn't interested in making monuments anymore, much less tributes to a painter that he didn't get on with very well. But with Gwen John, he made these most beautiful portraits: her mouth, her short chin, her strands of hair, her intensity. And they go from this very big plaster, which is the last study, to these tiny, tiny terracotta head.
There has been a lot of talk in recent years, perhaps, of Rodin's relationships with him in a slightly pejorative way. This idea that he sort of exploited Camille Claudel. I certainly didn't think, reading your catalogue essay, that you agreed with that sort of approach.
Not at all. I mean, Rodin walked into this room, almost every woman would feel his kind of charismatic power. He was really curious about women. He was curious about his sister Maria. He was very faithful to Rose, his companion, for 50 years almost. Women were attracted to him, and vice versa. And I think he had a very calming influence on them. We can see when he's drawing that they feel relaxed and able to kind of be themselves, and he very closely observing what female sexuality is like. By the time he met Camille, he was 64. She was a young student. She wrote a lovely letter to him, for instance, that said, "You and I were not meant to have natural children. Our art is our children." He didn't exploit them. On the contrary, with Gwen John, he said, "You should wash more regularly. You should draw every day. You should believe in yourself." She was a bit of a nuisance for him. She wrote him over 1,000 letters begging him to come visit her. It's the wrong description of Rodin to say he exploited women.
Rodin is born in the first half of the 19th century. When did he actually die?
He died in 1917. He was born in 1840.
So he's very much the contemporary of Monet.
Contemporary Monet, Renoir, and friends with the Impressionists. This exhibition sort of story gets underway in 1881 when he first comes to London. There's a sub-theme of Rodin in Britain. And it comes to a conclusion in 1914 with the donation of 18 works to the British nation. And that's sort of the end of his productive working life. But in the last 3 years of his life, of course, they set up the Musée Rodin in his former home, Hotel Biron.
I don't think many people will have a problem recognising the modernity of Rodin when they come to this exhibition, even though he's doing things, making bronze human figures, which are supposedly old-fashioned. Why is he not old-fashioned?
Well, Rodin's total work is vast. So for every finished monument, there are sort of hundreds of preliminary studies, variations, experimentation. And I think that appeals to people today. They want to see these kind of roughly put together works. He used the figures from the gates as a sort of, the gates as a kind of crucible, and he kept testing out, putting them in different ways, enlarging, taking off the head. And I think one thing that people relate to now is this sort of sense of process and forms that have nothing to do with anatomy. The iris figures, they're not even necessarily female or male. So that's part of the modernity, but also his use of photography, his idea of the fragment, it's kind of never finished with Rodin. He's a very great artist.
Do you have a favourite of Rodin's works?
Three sort of, quote, iris figures, which are the sort of head of Gwen John, not necessarily her body, but one girl is whispering to another. They're sort of telling each other their secrets, and they're only 6 inches tall, and I think they're absolutely splendid. Jonathan, what's your favourite?
I suppose it's The Gates of Hell, but that's simply because I've probably thought about it the most. I'm actually overwhelmed by the exhibition, so I haven't seen an exhibition quite like this in London for a while, this sort of extravagant celebration of a great 19th century artist is wonderful. Well, this is a good point now at which to go and look at some of Rodin's works in detail and to get a real sense of the character of this exhibition. And first of all, I'd just like to try and evoke what this exhibition is like. It's in these great, high, wonderful, you know, halls of the Royal Academy, which are grand salons, the kinds of places in which you would have seen Rodin's works in the 19th century, at the what was called the Salon Exhibition. And there's a grandeur to the Royal Academy which perfectly suits this sculpture. You come into these rooms, I'm looking at three bronze heads, and behind them there's a maquette of the Gates of Hell. There are drawings. There are a lot of drawings in the exhibition, actually, a lot of things on the walls as well as in the spaces. There are vitrines containing plaster casts. There are all kinds of sculptures. I mean, there's a tremendous number of things, and big things. If you like big, full-on, powerful art, and I do, you know, this is great. I've only just come in, and I'm only just getting the feel of it. But I have to say, I think this is the one. This is the exhibition of the autumn in London, because it's got something special. And there hasn't been a big Rodin exhibition for about 20 years in this country. Wow, we're walking through into a room which it has a dreamlike quality. And my God, wow. I mean, we're standing in front of the Burghers of Calais, which is one of Rodin's most famous works that he made. He made it as a monument to six brave citizens who risked their lives to defend the city of Calais in the Middle Ages. It's an obscure episode in French history to us now. It's the kind of thing that 19th century art absolutely loved. But there's nothing old-fashioned about Rodin's version. There are these six figures. Of course, it's one of the most famous sculptures in the world. It has an instant, universal, moving quality. We're going to walk around it now. I mean, we're talking about a big bronze group which is in the middle of a white hall, and the figures, one of them is kind of arching over and holding his hand to his head in a position of grief. There's a tremendous emotional power, a dignity. What people love about this work, I think, is its dignity, is its sense of the citizens being universal, people who might be... We can easily apply it to a contemporary situation. Everything in this room has a ghostly quality. It is like being in Dante's Inferno, and this idea of hell being very important to Rodin's imagination, and not just hell, but Dante's hell. And when Dante went down into hell in his great poem, The Inferno, he encountered the spirits of people he'd known in life. And when you look at some of these works, the monumental nude to Pierre de Wissant, which is related to the Burghers of Calais, this is exactly how I would picture meeting one of the ghosts in hell in Dante's Inferno.
My name's John, and I am senior art handler here. What I'm doing at the moment is the final thing of putting the labels on all the works.
What was it like installing an exhibition on this scale?
I enjoyed this show because it was just mainly sculpture. It was a change. I enjoyed that. Different skills we have to use installing, you know, sculpture rather than painting. And I personally enjoy that.
I should say at this point, actually, that as well as sculpture, there's a lot of drawings, a lot of photographs. I guess they're trying to put Rodin's works in a rich historical context. But from your point of view, my impression would be that Rodin's works were less fragile than some people's. They're sort of massive metal sculptures.
Oh, no. No, yeah. A lot of them are plasters and are more fragile, very fragile. And the procedure is the same, whether it's marble or bronze, and it's all treated with the same delicate handling.
The tremendous thing about this exhibition is that you have the sense of a mind at work, an imagination at work. Rodin clearly had an unbelievable physical imagination, that he had these forms in his head which sort of melt into one another. And all his ideas seem to literally melt into one another. Somehow, it's all the same idea. It's all one. All these bodies belong to the same stupendous, fantastic, epic work. It's the work is Rodin's life. But as we saw at the beginning with the Gates of Hell, he really did have a program that unified many of the works. And we're looking now at a maquette of the Kiss, and that's, you know, I mean a plaster model. And The Kiss is one of Rodin's most famous works, partly because we have the great marble in the Tate Gallery in London. This literally is a work that he took from the gates of hell. I mean, it's on those gates, and it actually begins as an image of Francesca da Rimini. It's a story of lovers, which is in Dante's Inferno. He encounters these adulterous lovers who are caught up in a great swirling rush of bodies, which is what happens to adulterers in hell. They never have any rest. But of course, there's a sort of pity in the way Dante tells the story. It's tragic because, you know, she had reasons for being an adulteress. By the time you get to The Kiss, though, I mean, none of that story survives. When you look at Rodin's plaster, you're already looking at a very sensual, straightforward image of lovers. They're both naked. They're in a very intimate embrace. I guess it must have been provocative in the 19th century. It's not provocative now, but it's beautiful. I mean, everybody finds it beautiful. Well, we're almost at the end of the show now, and there are so many. It's a huge exhibition full of riches. I just wanted to single out, there's a vitrine here with three dancers. They're ballet dancers, and they each has got their sort of their left leg raised up, and they're holding it. And of course, you immediately think of Degas. It's a reminder of Rodin's time. He made these Degas. These are very similar to Degas sculptures, which are bronze sculptures, and so there's a sense that you realize how modern both of them were and how modern Paris was at that time. And when we've come through to the final work, which is a tremendous conclusion, which is the thinker in stone, or rather in plaster. And it's on a stupendous scale. So it's the figure that we began by looking at on the gates of hell. And here he is, and he's hunched in thought. It's in the central tribune, under a great dome. The lights are coming down in his body, his face is in shadow. He's massive, he's bigger than life size. There's a colossal quality here, which really, I mean, you've taken what was actually quite a small figure on top of these gates, you've made it a colossus. It's still very much the same sense of tragedy and of grief. Perhaps what makes Rodin universal is his sense of tragedy. The fact that he was interested in Dante, the fact that he was interested in the burghers of Calais, in people who suffered. There is a lot of sensuality in this exhibition. Rodin is obviously a very sexual person. There's some fantastic kind of, you know, erotic sculptures in it. And there's a great sense of life. But there is a macabre quality to it as well. And his work is not hard. His bodies are not hard. There's not a sense of heroic strength in them, actually. There's a sense of falling away in them, which is why he's very good at representing sex. He's good at representing eroticism, because there's a sort of melting quality to his work, and that's really, of course, why he used to like to cast rather than to carve. When you look at The Thinker, you just realise, yeah, he's not only the contemporary of Monet, he's the contemporary of Edvard Munch, he's the contemporary of symbolism. If I had to pin Rodin down, I'd say he's a symbolist. And that is a very, very powerful, tragic melancholia that comes from his work. And that's what the peculiarity that grabs you, that it's sensual, and yet there's also a quality of despair, even a quality of nihilism somewhere in it. And that's why he's so modern. That's why he's so contemporary, actually. This is the first big exhibition of Rodin in the 21st century, and it's pretty obvious from this exhibition that he's going to continue to fascinate people as much as he did through the 20th century. Rodin, one of the great artists of all time, one of the great sculptors of all time, and a man for our time, and this is a great exhibition.